My aha of wholeness. Wellspring is a program for personal spiritual deepening offered by Unitarian Universalists across the country in which participants seek to unfold the hidden wholeness within. At the time, I participated in the very first Wellspring years ago with Kathy McGowan and Charlie Hatch and members of the UU Albany congregation. I had no idea what Wellspring would bring to so many UU congregations. I was blessed by the Wellspring service a few weeks ago. I was invited to light the chalice for the service. After worship associate Gigi Dillman's explanation of hidden wholeness, while I was lighting the chalice, I met an inexplicable emotional moment. I've lit the chalice before, but I had never been deeply moved by the task. As the service was ending and I was walking towards the chalice to extinguish it, I thought, I do not want to extinguish this flame today. What would happen if I didn't extinguish the flame? But I was invited back to the moment, space, and my very simple task of extinguishing the chalice by the sound of your shared words. I was reassured by your voices and faces that the light, warmth, and commitment in our congregation are deep, complex, and inextinguishable. As I continued to unpack the emotion of the chalice experience, the next week I started reading one of the two new UUA common reads, Centering, Navigating Race, Authenticity, and Power in Ministry. In the first few pages, I experienced my aha moment, in which I realized that we as a congregation have the potential and are called to the same wholeness as we are as individuals. A wholeness that eliminates the margins, includes the marginalized, and embraces the intersectionality of theological belief, race, culture, class, and gender identity. A wholeness capable of acknowledging the ways privilege undermines justice and the whole truth. I'll say it again. A wholeness capable of acknowledging the ways privilege undermines justice and the whole truth. A wholeness that requires transforming our UU culture to be more inclusive because our theology is not the problem. The word cloud we built as a congregation during the visioning process a few years ago helped us to find, acknowledge, and claim our shared values, our path to wholeness. We may not share any single value, but as a whole, the sum of those values describes the vision for what we want to build here. Some of us are core humanists, Buddhists, Christians, atheists, agnostics, Muslims, Jews, transcendentalists, earth-centered, and yet we all come together on Sunday mornings. There is wholeness in that coming together. Reverend Mitra Ranima says about wholeness in her introduction to Centering, there is a new paradigm for creating sustainable, multiculturally competent communities of faith. I am with Reverend Ranima. I believe the direction we are moving is towards congregational wholeness, and in so becoming, we might also become multiculturally competent. Thomas Merton was a Catholic monk, writer, theologian, poet, mystic, and social activist with a deep appreciation of Taoism, Buddhism, and Sufism. His view of religion? The function of faith is not to reduce mystery to rational clarity, but to integrate the known and the unknown together into a living whole, in which we are more and more able to transcend the limitations of our external selves. How do we know what we don't know? How do we transcend the limitations of our external selves to integrate the unknown and the known into a living whole? How do we get there as a congregation to wholeness? I believe the way is by listening. In Wellspring, listening is key. Listening to each other, to our own subconscious and our instincts, and to the call from the larger community, all without judgment or the need to counsel or help. Listening is about letting go of ourselves for the moment and being totally present for the teller. In his book, 7,000 Ways to Listen, Mark Nepo speaks chapter after chapter about the relationship between listening and wholeness. He explains that if we go deep enough into the personal, we reach the universal, the wholeness. To really listen, we must invite our attention and suspend our self-reference to awaken to truths different from our own. If because of the limitations our external selves impose on us, we cannot experience the life of another, we must listen. I cannot be black. I cannot be transgender. I cannot move through the world as a person of color or a person of a gender identity different from my own. To understand and make their truth my own, I must share their experiences by listening to their truths. So then the question becomes, how do we engage in fully listening? I recently attended a seminar for business and community leaders in which improvisation professional Kat Coppett of MOPCO Improv Theater in downtown Schenectady explained her approach to active listening. I asked permission to share her improv approach, and she responded, share away and have fun. So here are the questions she uses in training leaders to listen. How am I listening? Who am I listening to? And what am I listening for? So we'll take those one at a time. How am I listening? What is my intention? Am I interested in understanding the experience of the teller or confirming my own experiences? Do I relate to this experience, or is this too different from my own to relate? Can I listen even when the words make me uncomfortable? Am I just waiting for the person speaking to finish so I can speak? And then there's, who am I listening to? The voices in my own head? My own agenda? The other person? The noise in the room? Am I listening to my own biases? Am I listening so that I can receive the truth of the teller? And then what am I listening for? Am I listening for emotion, for facts, to take in the facts and assess the relative value of the pieces of information? What is the intention of the teller? To illustrate the importance of this third question, Kat Coppett tells a story about an improv scene in which one of her colleagues, infamous for missing the most valuable facts in a scene, played a wealthy widow, and another one played the widow's butler in the scene. As the butler set down a tray carrying the teapot and cups on a table in front of his employer, he said, "Madam, I must inform you that your son has just returned from the war. He is alive, although it looks as though he is missing a number of limbs." The widow responded, "Ooh, tea, yummy." Does that story seem uncomfortably familiar to a recent story about a flag, a national anthem, kneeling as a form of protest, and racial injustice in America? Why aren't we talking about racism in America in 2017? As Renee Graham says in the opinion section of the Gazette this morning, the greatest trick by some Americans is convincing some of us that talking about racism is worse than racism itself. Why aren't we listening when people speak to us and beseech us to listen by kneeling? We have wonderful opportunities to listen coming this year with book discussions, films, and assessments, engaging in the next round of addressing white supremacy culture in worship later this month, and in continuing opportunities as our new co-ministers invite us to look at ourselves, our habits, our practices, and to consider how to strengthen our congregation by dismantling those habits and practices that reinforce a culture of white supremacy. I look forward to stretching my mind with you in the journey to become comfortable with being uncomfortable in the process of bringing the invisible to the visible, the margins to the center, and our wholeness as a congregation to its fullness. I'd like to end with a quote by bell hooks, author, feminist, and social activist. Quote, "Beloved community is not formed by eradication of difference, but by its affirmation. By each of us claiming the identities and cultural legacies that shape who we are and how we live in the world." End quote. May it be.